the number one thing is like, we need to support each other. And if you want to see more content with people that look like you, mm-hmm. we need to support content of
people like that look like you, even though. Like Welcome to Latinx Can, a podcast showcasing Latinx professionals who turn their dreams into realities. I'm your host, la doctora Jenire Flores Delgado, and today I bring you an extract from our conversation with Carlos Alcines, Vice President of Multicultural Marketing at Warner Brothers, who highlighted how important the Latinx audience is to Hollywood. And he is here to tell you, si se puede, my friends, si se puede. And so today you are the Vice President of Multicultural Marketing at Warner Bros. Pictures, right?
Yes.
So I'm curious because you're saying back in 2012, that was maybe the first time that your Latinidad was like something that could give you that competitive advantage. Now you're Vice President of Multicultural Marketing, and I wonder how your Latinidad helps you be successful at your job.
Yeah, I mean, so my current job is I work on all of the Warner Brothers Pictures movies with a team of folks that our job is to market the films to different cultures. So we work on every movie, but we kind of like create bespoke campaigns for Latinos, for Black audiences, AAPI or Asian American audiences. And so being Latino, obviously, and specifically having that Cuban background, but then also understanding Mexican mm-hmm. culture because of where mm-hmm. I grew up has been incredibly helpful because Hispanic audiences, Latino, you know, whatever you want to, whichever nomenclature works,
yeah,
is a huge chunk of box office revenue. Depending on the movie, on a movie's opening weekend, it could be on average 21% of an audience. Mm-hmm. But if it's a horror movie, you could end up in the 30s. When we had The Curse of La Llorona, I think that opening weekend, mm-hmm. Latino, which is not an ideal movie to talk about this, but you know, it's because it's a horror movie and it did have that Latino, you know, I think that opening weekend was like 40-something% Latino. These are huge numbers.
Yeah.
Its audience comprises. And sometimes, like what I was saying about these markets like McAllen and San Antonio and whatever, on a horror movie, you know, a Conjuring Universe movie, because we work on those. Sometimes mm-hmm. the number one theater in the country will be in El Paso.
Wow.
Like that's the highest grossing theater in the country for that movie. And that's just pretty incredible to see, like the power of the Hispanic community.
That's amazing. I had no idea about how important we are in terms of consumers, right, of these products. Oh. And I just find it really funny because I think we were all traumatized with La Llorona when we were little kids and then just like trying to go and relive our childhood traumas. It's kind of interesting.
It's interesting because I love, love, love horror movies. And it just turns out that Latino audiences love, love, love horror movies. So I don't know. I guess I fall into the bucket there.
Right. And then the other thing that you were mentioning, right, like we were talking earlier, is that we are also a complicated group because we are Latinos or Latinx people in the U.S., but we all come from our own countries. We all come from our own cultures, right? And so some people are against this term of, oh, I'm not a Latino or whatever, I'm just Venezuelan, for example. But as a group, it brings so much power when we are united in this umbrella of being Latinos, right? And we can do that while we celebrate our differences and we also find our points in common, right?
Yeah, I think that it's really interesting because this was something we talk about a lot at work, because I worked on a movie called In the Heights that mm-hmm. I had never had that experience watching a movie, but I'm Cuban, right? Mm. So I watched that movie and I felt something in me that I had never seen while watching a movie, which is like, wow, this is speaking directly to me. And, you know, that movie ultimately, and I love that movie so much, but it didn't resonate with audiences in at a mass scale. I think it was very impactful for us, like a smaller audience.
Yeah.
But it ultimately didn't reach that like scale of like a massive, you know, big blockbuster movie. And I think part of it was because there is this idea that it's not for me. Because it did have a, you know, a Mexican actress in a lead role with Melissa Barrera, and but ultimately the music, you know, the flags, the all of it was very Caribbean. It was about Dominicans and Puerto Ricans and Cubans, and that was the majority of the culture in the movie stemmed from that. And so I think that was a bit part of why it didn't necessarily like hit in the same way with all Latino audiences. And so it's just really, really complicated. And I think there is something about, because there is such a lack of diverse content out there.
Yeah.
When there is something that is quote unquote Latino, you know, you expect it to represent an entire community.
Yeah.
One piece of content cannot do that. It's not possible. So I think there needs to be a mindset shift within Hispanics in the US where it can have Latino culture in it and have Hispanic culture, and you can enjoy it just as that. It doesn't need to be exactly your culture. We enjoy movies all the time with white people's culture in it.
Yeah, for sure.
The culture, and we just accept it, and that's what we watch, and we don't think about it in that way. But yet when it's something that's ours, we assign so much pressure. We put so much pressure on it that it's never going to live up to that.
Yeah, we have unrealistic expectations, right, for something that represents us. I mean, I feel what you're saying with In the Heights. I loved it. We watched it here at home, my husband and I. And I'm from Venezuela and he's from Puerto Rico. So we were like dancing to every song and we were like, this is amazing. I love this. But then it comes back to that experience that I had, right? Florida versus San Diego. And it's like, wow, it's so different. But it doesn't mean that I don't get interested in learning more about, you know, all the taco stalls that are here in San Diego and how to, you know, taste different kinds of food and just learn even more about this Latino culture that is out there, all the different places in Latin America. It just makes us even better. You know, there's a lot more things that we can draw from.
Yeah. And I just, it's, you know, united, we have more power. And I think that the number one thing is like we need to support each other and support content. If you want to see more content with people that look like you, we need to support content of
people like that look like you. For sure. Yeah. And I think the other thing that I have, because when I came to the States when I was 21, I think close to 21. So I grew up in Venezuela, right? So when I started like watching stuff or like Latino shows or Latinx shows in the US, some of them don't represent me. I don't feel like immediately connected to the story. Like I'm thinking of Gentified, for example, on Netflix. I don't necessarily connect directly with that story because that's not my story. But, and then I even remember having this initial thought of like, oh, maybe this show is not for me. But then I go and I make the effort to continue watching for a couple of more episodes. And then they grab me because it's an experience that I can learn from. And I would love to learn about how other Latinos are living and are experiencing life in the US.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think there's a few shows like that. And the thing is, like, the Hispanic community is so diverse that there's so much room for that different, those different experiences.
For sure.
Totally right. I mean, Gentified, Vida, you know, all those shows, they're all so different.
Yeah. So you've mentioned already a couple of times working on Father of the Bride, and you just throw it in there nonchalantly. But Father of the Bride is a movie adaptation that aired earlier this summer, right? And the movie I remember is the one with Steve Martin from 91, I think, right? And so I thought, oh, maybe like, you know, this is just the same movie. We're just like with a different cast. But then I realized that even that movie in 91 already was an adaptation, right? But then this one that just aired, it had a twist to it, right? It had a multicultural cast. I think it's an all Latino cast. And then on top of it, it stars Gloria Estefan. And as a Cuban American, I don't know, I feel that I'm Venezuelan and I'm like already freaking out for working with Gloria Estefan. How was it for you and your family to be involved in that project?
I love Gloria Estefan. And I think the best part of the experience working with Gloria Estefan is that she's as wonderful and great as you kind of hope that someone like that would be. And including, because I got to meet her husband, Emilio, as well, yeah, and her right. team of people. And, you know, we work with a lot of celebrities and talent and things, and they were first class. Like, it was amazing. It was the best experience. And I'm not going to lie, I was freaking out inside.
Poker face.
Yeah, playing it cool on the outside, as cool as possible. But the first time I interacted with her, because, you know, we're marketing, so we kind of, the movie's already shot, everything's already happened, and, you know, mm-hmm. we work with the talent teams, but you don't necessarily meet the talent until you're actually doing things. Mm-hmm. You know, was that a creative content shoot where the cast was all together shooting things. By the way, and getting to meet Andy Garcia was another, like, these yeah. are people that, like, you know, this is like Cuban royalty. Like, this is,
yeah, you know, for sure. You know,
and they were all so great. And, you know, of course, I, with Gloria, and I never do this with talent ever, but that first time I met her, I had to like pull her aside and be like, I just need to tell you that I'm Cuban. And like, you know, this means a lot. And the whole, you know, I kind of told her she was so amazing. And, you know, over everything that we did on that movie and working on that movie, they just like continued to be great. And ultimately, like at the premiere, because we had the premiere in Miami.
No, oh, wow.
On Calle Ocho, which was amazing. And Emilio had helped us acquire like a salsa band to like perform at the premiere, at the party and the whole thing. And she got up there with Andy Garcia and Emilio on the drums. Like conga drums, the whole thing, and she sang Mi Tierra.
It oh my gosh.
Like a once in a lifetime, like, incredible moment that I will never, ever, ever forget. It was so cool. It was so cool.
Oh, wow. I'm getting goosebumps right now.
Oh, and then the other thing was that the premiere was in Miami, but we also did a big screening with the Latino Film Festival here in LA called La Leaf, which is the Los Angeles Latino International Film Festival. And that film festival is part of the, I talked about UCinema project earlier. Mm-hmm. It's part of the Latino Film Institute and what they do. And it was started by Edward James Olmos. So we premiered the movie there with Gloria and Andy and the cast and everybody. And my mom just happened to be in town for that because she had been helping us with our son over the weekend. And I was like, you should stay and come with me to this event. So my mom got to meet Andy and Gloria and Emilio
of them.
And that was pretty cool as well. Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine you like pulling Gloria aside and he's like, can we take a picture for my mom?
What's funny in typical, they're so nice, by the way, like throughout, I met Emilio once early on and he remembered who I was the entire time throughout the campaign. And like, they were, again, they're incredible. But my mom just introduced herself, because I was working, introduced herself to Emilio and kind of had started talking to him and whatever. And then so later on when I was like, Mom, we got to get your photo with Gloria, like, let's go. And when we walked up to them, there was Emilio acting like him and my mom were best friends. And he like looked at my mom and saw me, and my mom was like, this is my son, he's working on the marketing of whatever. Like, Emilio was the one that was like, get in here, Gloria, we got to take a picture with these. And like, he helped us get the picture. So I have a photo with Emilio, Gloria, and my mom, and it's amazing.
Oh, that's amazing. And I feel like these people are so ingrained in our culture, in our Latin culture. You know, I'm Venezuelan, but I know Gloria Estefan. My dad played her songs all the time. I know Mi Tierra, you know, is the national anthem of Venezuela or something like that. And it's just so great to see them be part of the mainstream, you know, representing all of us just in movies like everybody else. And it's not just a Latino movie. It's a movie for everybody to see.
And that was our main thing with that entire movie is that, I mean, it was helped by the fact that Gloria and Andy kind of transcend Latina, right? Like they are just icons and they've been doing this for a long time. But the main thing for us selling the movie was like, it's not the Latino father of the bride. It's not the Latinx father of the bride. It's just father of the bride. And it just also has Latinos in it. And it's, you know, something that we said a lot while we were working on it and talking about it was like, it's entertainment with culture. It's not about culture. And so we're allowed to have stories that just are, not every story needs to be about being Latino. Like you're allowed to just have a romantic comedy that has Latinos in it. And, you know, it's that like normalization of representation that I think is really key and like where we all need to get to, where it's just like, we're just a part of it. And not every story has to be, of course, those stories are important. And, you know, like there's a lot of things that are about being Latino and whatever. And those are powerful stories that we need. But we're also allowed to just have a horror movie that has Latinos in it and a romantic comedy that has Latinos in it and all of those different genres. And like we need that kind of representation.
Yeah. It's part of just, you know, representing our joy. It doesn't have to be only about our suffering. It's also about, you know, all the happy moments that we can live as well.
Yeah. And it's the same thing. Like the number one movie that I'm most excited about for next year is a DC superhero movie called Blue Beetle. And Blue Beetle is a Mexican-American superhero. And so it's, you know, I'm being very careful to not call it a Latino superhero movie because it's not. Mm-hmm. It's just DC's next superhero movie, right?
Yeah.
But also it's about Jaime Reyes, who his family is in the mix. And there's all this, this Latinidad within it. But it's just a DC superhero movie with a Latino in it. And it's, by the way, the first Latino-led theatrical superhero film to ever.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing. We'll make sure that we go and watch it. Right now, I'm having a lot of fun. I have no idea if Wakanda Forever is part of Warner or not, but I'm having a really good time seeing Lupita Nyong'o dancing on stage and just like having a good time.
Yeah, I saw the video. They were dancing to Suavemente and they were doing like, it's amazing. It's so cool. I haven't seen that movie yet, but I cannot wait. And I think it's been incredible to see Lupita and Tenoch and the other cast members like doing all their interviews, and you know, it's awesome.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. So I hope that we see more of that. The other thing that I wanted to talk about, we kind of just already touched a little bit on like, you know, show cancellations and what we can do, because like there's very few Latino content out there, Latin content out there. So every cancellation hurts. It hurts me for sure. But there's one thing that I want to talk about. And again, I'm just picking your brain, because now there's a lot of more streaming services, right? And all of them are under a paywall, right? And so I wonder, when we talk about, oh, you know, these Latin films or these Latin shows, they don't have an audience, right? I wonder if that is because these shows are behind a paywall. I think of Gordita Chronicles, for example. And so I watched it and I loved it, but maybe some people don't have HBO Max and so they can't pay for it. So I wonder if like, I really want to just get a better idea of what the streaming service is doing for just all movies, right? Because I can see it restrictive in one area, but I can also see a large family that just has one subscription and everybody gets for together for family night, you know, movie night, and then the 25 people watch the movie instead of just 25 people going to the movies, right? So, but I just wonder if there's data around there.
I mean, I think that I don't know about, like, when it comes to the cost of streaming services and if that's a huge barrier for people. I do know there's huge numbers of people on these services. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of different metrics that are looked at when it comes to, like, what the success of a show is. Mm-hmm. There's, like, acquisition numbers, which is, like, if somebody's signed up for the service and that's the first thing that they watch, like, that counts as an acquisition. Mm-hmm. There's view through, like, you know, did they finish mm-hmm. the show? Right. They watch every episode. Did they, you know, there's different metrics and analytics that are taken into account for those things. And I don't know the answer to this. And I agree. I loved Gordita Chronicles a lot. Mm-hmm. I also don't know if, and that this is, like, within the company. So I'm not saying anything bad, but I don't know the answer. When it comes to these shows like Gentified, or which was also recently, you know, that got canceled as well. And those, like, how much money is being put in to market those shows outside of the Latino community as well? You know what I mean? Like, are those shows being given the same amount of push that other shows are? Which, and I know also there's a lot of factors, right? Like, how much did the show cost? Like, what stars are in the show? Like, what, you know, who created the show? There's a lot of things that affect how much marketing budget goes to something, and it's all about ROI. Mm-hmm. But I do think that that is something to be looked at. Like, are those shows being given a fair shot when it comes to that? And I think in terms of everyday people and watching these shows, and if you love it, like, and it's something that is diverse or has those diverse elements, I think that I would encourage people to talk about it, post mm-hmm. about it on social media, like, tell your friends, encourage people to watch it. I think that stuff does matter. And I think the number one way that people watch a new show is because their friend tells them, like, oh my God, you got to see it. It's so good. You know, like, you can market something all you want, but I think that that firsthand recommendation, it has a lot more weight to it. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I don't know, kind of a non-answer answer, but, you know, I do know when it comes to Latinos, like, we do go to the movies and we do spend money on movie tickets and we do consume. I think I'm pretty sure, if I don't have the data point in front of me, but, like, I'm pretty sure we over-index on streaming services and things like that, and in general, like, consuming of entertainment. And so I don't know if the price point is that much of a barrier when it comes to this conversation, because we are spending money on entertainment elsewhere.
So it's more about, you know, supporting each other, like we were just talking about, right? Just making sure that we watch movies that are by Latinos or have Latino talent that may not be 100% us, but it's there and we get to support each other.
Yeah. And I think if you hear yourself saying, like, oh, I don't think I relate to that, or I don't think that's for me because it just feels a little off, but it's Latino. Like, I would ask people to give it a shot. If you don't like it, you don't like it. Don't watch something you don't like.
Exactly.
Like, you know, don't not consume it because you don't think it's exactly your story or exactly your culture. Right. Because there's a lot of different people out there and we consume their stories all the time.
Yeah, for sure. I can think of, like, at least two shows. Like, I was watching White Lotus, right? I don't know how to pronounce it. It's like, there's nothing I can relate to that show, but I watched the whole thing, you know? So.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, Carlos, just to close the interview on a light note, one thing that we asked all our guests is, imagine somebody came to visit you in your city. I think you're in LA. And unfortunately, you were at a movie premiere and cannot show them around. And they wanted to get this local sort of taste for the city. So what are your top three places or things that you would recommend for them to do while they are in LA?
I hate questions like this, first of all. But I think that sometimes you got to go with the classics, which is, you know, Hollywood and Highland, which is the Chinese theater that has all the handprints. And, you know, it's that classic Hollywood thing that you've seen in 1,000 movies. So if you've never been to LA and you come to LA, I feel like that's something you just have to check off your list, because it is it's classic. I love 80s stuff and like 80s rock and roll and, you know, like Motley Crue and that kind of vibe. So there's like the Sunset Strip is something that I love. And some of those bars that like you read, like the Rainbow Room and like those things, just because I love 80s and that whole, you know, thing. Like I went to the Motley Crue and Def Leppard concert a few months ago when they were here. I love that stuff. So if you're into that, I would do that. And then I live in Burbank, and there's a, which is like a suburb of Los Angeles, but there's a Cuban restaurant called Portos. Great patalito de guayaba, ropa vieja, you know, lechon, like the whole, whole thing. So that's where I go to get my Cuban fix.
Fantastic. Well, Carlos, thank you so much for joining us in the podcast today.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Thank you for listening. If you want to put a face to the voices you just heard, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at LatinxScan. If you have questions or feedback, you can email us at latinxscan@gmail.com. And if you want to support our project, please leave a review. We have made it easy for you and added the links to the show notes. That's it for now. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button. And remember, unidos somos más.